I want to talk about how the events unfolded in the nation's capital just as Biden was, you know, being certified as the next president. You know, people essentially raided in on the Capitol building and storming the home of our government, and how visually startling that was. As that was playing out on television, or you were hearing sound bites or catching notifications, where was your head in that moment as an educator?
Well, in third grade, we spend a month every year exploring what rights and responsibilities are. And we teach that through the perspective of moments in our history when rights have been denied to citizens. And normally that is most palatable and accessible to students when anchored by an exploration of the civil rights movement. And should the right to protest be protected or enforced, or and who's responsible for protecting our rights? Who's responsible for enforcing our rights? So that was running through my head. Are my students going to be looking at what's happening right now as an example of citizens exercising their rights? Are they going to be able to see that those rights were taken advantage of? Are they going to be able to see the discrepancies between how protesters were treated in the summer and how protesters were treated yesterday?
That's a very, I would say, almost advanced conversation that adults are having. And when we think about an audience that's a bunch of 8 or 9 year olds, we tend to be overprotective with what information we share or our conversations. But you are really bringing this out in a way where you're talking about essentially white privilege or race or who has a right to protest in this country.
Often you hear them coined as hard conversations or difficult conversations, and they are. But I think if we give the 8 or 9 year olds the respect of honoring the fact that they too bear witness to these experiences and events and give them an opportunity to speak to them, it only helps them feel seen and heard more so. And if you put in the work to create a classroom environment where you have systems in place already for conversation, it shouldn't be an alarming transition. You know, there should already be a sense of sanctuary for them to feel they have the ability to express themselves.
How did this actually play out the day after when you were in the classroom? I don't know whether that was virtual or in person, you can clue us in, but how did those conversations sound actually when you were able to process?
I used guidelines that I appropriated from my training with Center for Restorative Justice and restorative practices that are meant to encompass listening, trust, respect, love. And after walking through those guidelines, we then transitioned into a conversation, and I just kind of opened it up and said, what happened? Who knows what happened? And had them give words to it, and then let them kind of guide the conversation based on what they knew. And it's my job, of course, to provide accuracy, right? It's my job to make sure that they have the facts. It's my job to make sure that everyone in the space feels comfortable with what's being said. But, you know, with things like this, again, they had the facts for the most part. I mean, someone might have said they stormed the White House and they needed to understand it was the Capitol building, but they understood the intention. Mm-hmm. And some had more facts than others.
And a lot of times they're getting kind of trickles of information from their parents or whatever news program is playing in the background of their dinner table.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think for me, one of the most profound moments was when my student just very calmly said, it doesn't matter who you like or whether you support this person. That's not the way to behave. That's not how change things. That's not how we communicate.
Maybe that student has a political future ahead.
Maybe. And she's a very calm demeanor, and she's obviously a very sort of contemplative, thoughtful kid. And when asked about how they felt, you know, a lot of the kids said, I feel angry. And some kids said, I feel sad. And I said, well, why do you feel that anger? What makes you feel that anger? And they said, that's they've hurt our country, I think one of the kids said. They've hurt our country, and it doesn't make me feel safe. One of my students made the connection between the protests last summer and this. And he said, they treated the protesters this past summer so differently. You know, there was so much more force this summer, and yesterday it just seemed like they could do whatever they wanted. So they're just not blind to any of it.
And I think, too, that speaks to this empathetic and listening space that you've created in your classroom. And I have to think that that has implications for their generation. If they are encouraged to share and open up and disagree, maybe that's a glimmer of hope for our future.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think these kids have a lot to say, and they have a lot of feelings. But I also just think that most of the time, they're eager to feel a part of things, and they're just going to want to ask more questions. And if you are a person they trust, and if you're able to explain things in an honest way, then more times than not, they're not scared. They're just more aware. And if they get scared and they feel sad, then they have someone they trust to help them process that.
Susanna, thank you so much for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh my God, it's my pleasure. I'm seriously here anytime. And thank you for caring about it so much and asking for my participation, because I'm honored to be a part of it.